and welcome back to Stories from the Ashes, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm Amber, and today I am joined with Charlessa and Val, who you may remember from last season. They were with us a couple of different episodes. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, thank you.
So today we are going to just like jump right in because I know we have so many books that we want to talk about, and we are doing the 12 book reading challenge categories for the Reshelving Alexandria Reading Challenge for 2023. Charlessa, your first episode with us last season was when we talked about the reading challenges, and I know that you did multiple reading challenges from last year. How many of the reading challenges did you fill out?
Well, I was able to fill out all of them. I'm not saying that I did well with all of them, but I did fill them all out. They necessarily were not probably the best books of all of the way. But
yes. But it's fun to read broadly, even if you're not like, this is a book that changed my life. So
definitely.
That's fun. Well, congratulations on getting all of them. And Val, I don't know, do you like reading challenges? Is this something that you usually partake in? Did you as a kid?
Yes, I did as a kid. In fact, in second grade, I did a reading challenge for the Weekly Readers Weekly Raisins. Remember the California Raisins? They were like a big deal.
Yes.
And so it was a reading challenge through the winter. And then at the end of the year, you got to pick out a free book if you met your goal. That was the first time I ever did it. And that book was 1987. I got a book called Names, Names, Names. Name book for boys and girls. And so on one side is the girls, but then you have to flip the book like upside down to see the boys, which was really fun. And it gave little facts about names. And all four of my children were named using that book from 1987.
That's so sweet.
In my adult life, though, I found it a little bit harder to do challenges like that, especially when I homeschool, because I read so much for homeschooling. I feel exhausted reading, but the older my kids get, the more excited I am to read. And last year, I just set my own personal goal, and I blew it out of the water. So I'm ready. I'm ready for a challenge.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
That's good. Yeah.
So all of our reading challenges can be found on reshelvingalexandria.com on the website, and we have challenges for everybody. We have our basic challenge, which is 12 books. We have our Overachievers Challenge, which is 52 books. We have our Family Read Aloud Challenge, which I think is 6 for the standard, and then there's 2 bonus. Does that sound right, Charlessa?
Yeah.
And then, the Teen Challenge and our Kids Challenge. And as parents and as the kids and teens, you can obviously decide which of those you fall into. There's no cutoff age for the kids or the teens, whichever one seems more appealing to them. The Teen Challenge does have more titles than the kids. So if you have an overachieving kid, you might like the Teen Challenge better. And there's some overlap on some of the challenges. Obviously, our basic 12 books are included in the 52 book challenge. So it's really just a step up of 40 books for you. But even if you are not interested in a reading challenge, you will be getting great book recommendations. So we encourage you to listen in. And then in our comments section on the show notes, please add the books that you think would be really good for these categories that we didn't cover, because we are always looking for recommendations. And the last thing I want to say about this is that if you are in our Facebook groups, in our main group, we have gone through and Charlessa graciously made graphics for all of them. And then we posted all of the categories for all the challenges individually. And they have a hashtag that you can follow. And you can see everyone's recommendations for what they've read before that would fit the categories and what they're reading now for the categories. And then throughout the year, people will come back and add more suggestions or reviews for the books that they read, which is really nice if you haven't read a category and you're hitting November to read back through and see what people were like, yeah, this was a dud. Then you don't waste your time. But we're going to jump right in to category one on the 12 Books Reading Challenge, which is our basic challenge. And it was a book recommended by the Stories from the Ashes podcast. So that one is pretty fun and pretty self-explanatory, I would think. And all of those books can be found on the website, in all the show notes, and they also can be found on our literary catalog in the Stories from the Ashes little chapter of that catalog. But I think my books that I would most recommend from last year would be Kat Jong's The Memory of Forgotten Things. I don't think enough of you really took that recommendation seriously and went and read it. I love that book so much. And it is, even off of this challenge, it would fit a lot of categories on other challenges because it's science fiction, but it's set here on Earth. It just has like quantum physics, which is how it falls into the science fiction category. But it is on grief and processing. And I love the rhythm of the book. It's like, it's not slow, but it's steady. And it has high points in drama, but you're not just always trying to catch your breath, which can just be kind of draining. So I really recommend Memory of Forgotten Things. And then Jack Zulu was so exciting to have that one available, book one in a series. It's just starting up by Sam and Josiah Smith of the Green Ember family, and the authors being of the Green Ember family, not the book. The book is a new series that's coming. But I think it was the funniest book I read last year. I had a lot of laugh out loud moments with that one. And then my third and final one for this category would be my favorite book of the year, maybe my favorite book of the last 5 years, Place to Hang the Moon. That book is just part of my heart song now, and I cannot recommend it enough. And it was the most purchased book in our Facebook group last year, which I'm so excited about because everyone's reading it. Everyone is loving it.
Yeah.
No one has said that they hated it. And it's also probably the book most reviewed in the group last year. People would read it. They would love it. They would take the time to come and write a review to encourage other people to read it too. So it definitely is one of those books destined to be a classic. So A Place to Hang the Moon would fit a lot of different categories. It would even fit modeling healthy processing of emotions for this basic category. Mm-hmm. And when I say it would fit a lot of categories, not on the basic chart, but on all of the ones in general. So we will definitely be hearing about this book a lot more for different categories. But I think that it would also fall under a book that embodies an aspect of Psalm 23, which is our third category here. Because I think that there really is the kids definitely have that feeling of walking through the valley of the shadow of death and needing rest and needing goodness and mercy, and I think that they find those things in this book very clearly. So I think that it would be really good for that category.
Yeah.
Did you two have any recommendations of your favorite reads from last year from the podcast?
Well, I have not done any Dawn Wilkins books. Oh. And so I thought I would pencil one of those in for that. But that was my thought process. I've read Red, White, and Whole. We talked about that a couple times. I did some ML Farb's books. So I felt like that was a new person to me that I could pencil in.
Or I know we have
might
all
recommend
year.
Something this whole year that we could like put in there. We have all year. All these people, they're like, "Well, I'm going to put it." I'm like, "You guys, we have all year. Don't fill that challenge. Don't fill that one out. Right. Have an excuse to buy a book."
That's funny. That's right. Well, I just want to say about the Don L. Watkins books. So it's a trilogy, and for people that didn't hear the episode, it was written for a school and originally, and so the middle book was written first and then they become graded readers. So the last book was written next and it's a grade level up, and then the next book's a grade level up. So if you're looking for some grade level increasing complication, then that's a good way to read them. But the recommended reading order would be either, if your kid is like 11 and starting these books, I would recommend starting with Medallion, which is book two, and then going back to book one, and which is Shield, and then book three, which is Arrow. If you're an adult going into the books, I would go in order. So Shield, Medallion, Arrow. And the books were all written to work as standalones. So if you're an adult and you're only going to read one from the trilogy, I would read S.H.I.E.L.D. It's definitely my favorite. And it's also a hope punk book. It's the only one in the series that's hope punk, but that one is definitely hope punk. So, yeah.
Well, I think we could read all three then, because we can do a book in a series. One recommended from Ashes.
Yes. Or the there podcast, you go. Get the whole trilogy in.
There you go. See? Check, check. There you go. We're good. We're good. We're good.
That's awesome. I read Echo Mountain after listening to the Stories from the Ashes whole interview with the
Hutch.
What was his name? Help me out. Whatever. Hutch. Yeah. Oh, man. I got so excited that I listened to the audio. It was like 9.5 hours on audio, and I listened to it in like 3 days. And then I recommended it to, and I am still recommending it to everybody I know, because it was just really so incredible. So that was the one I'm still thinking about after
I
all
think
this
that's
time.
The
Yes. I think it portrayed a lot of different things, different topics that we're not covering, that, you know, the intergenerational thing, you know, relationships, but also the wholeness of healing, you know, that can come from the natural. And so, yes, I loved Echo Mountain too.
I actually loved the idea of the intergenerational friendship, because I keep I keep looking at our society seeing that kind of go away where everybody's just peer friends. But some of the nicest people I've known in this town in 20 years have been 20 or more years older than me, or 20 years or more younger than me. So it's really interesting, because there's just a totally different dynamic. And I also appreciated the idea that the main character is carrying around a whole lot of guilt through the majority of that book. And she's trying to keep it in as a child. And I think there's a story in that, because my kids are really honest about what they're going through and what they're feeling with me, but you know, they're carrying things that are really heavy for them to carry that they are not sharing. Right. It just is the reminder that we all do that. And we're all fighting a little bit of a battle sometimes, and to remember that people are always fighting something. So
I loved that book so much when I read it. Yeah. And we will be having Hutch back this year to talk just about that book and how he has used it in some of his classes for survival that he's taught, which is really exciting, because I love how it's a survival book, kind of like Hatchet or My Side of the Mountain, what would have been for boys except for girls, and then adds in all of that relational, not drama, I mean it is drama, but I don't want to like say that and have people think, oh, it's just a teen drama. It's not that type of drama. It's like the drama of life, like the relational exchanges that are happening intergenerationally, interrelationally within the family. And that book, I read it, and my first thought was, this book, like Anne of Green Gables and so many classics, is one of those books that you can very clearly read at different points in your life and know that you're going to get something different out of it. And so I was like, I'm jealous of Inara, who gets to read it as a teen and get the teen aspect out of it. And then she'll get to read it again as a mom and relate to the moms in the book and how they're processing things and the trauma that they're feeling, and understand it being a mother and having those experiences under her belt. And then as an older woman, being able to read it again and getting that looking back on life view and the experiences that you've had and the losses you felt. So that's a great book. It's set during the Great Depression, Echo Mountain by Lauren Wolk. And our recommendation is 12 and up for reading level. There's some, not for reading level, 12 and up for the emotional drama and intensity. And there is one scene that is medically accurate that can be kind of gross if you if you are a sensitive stomached person. It just kind of comes at you and is a little shocking, and it's shocking for the character who doesn't understand what she's seeing, which makes it shocking for the reader if they are not familiar with that form of healing. But then it's all explained clearly and all that, but it just to be aware of it. And so Echo Mountain, such a good book. So that was a great recap of season one of Stories from the Ashes and some of our best hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that leads us right into another Stories from the Ashes theme from last year, which is hope punk genre. And we talked about that in episode 23 with Mary, Apothecary Mary. And Mary introduced us to that. And hope punk actually is now a dictionary entry in the Collins Dictionary. And so this was the definition that they had: literary and artistic movement that celebrates the pursuit of positive aims in the face of adversity. I just love that. It's so beautiful. Mm. So some obvious hope punk books that are on everybody's list would be The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So if you're Googling hope punk books, those are the first ones that are going to come up that you would recognize. Beyond that, we would recommend Wing Feather Saga, the Green Ember books, like I said, Shield from Donnell Watkins, and Star Wars books. So if you wanted to do the Star Wars Shakespeare audiobooks on a car ride, those are so much fun. They're hysterical. Everybody loves the Star Wars Shakespeare. So those are really fun. And then the Skyward series by Brandon Sanderson. Those books definitely also would fall into the hope punk genre. Did the two of you have any books that stood out to you for that genre that I didn't cover?
I wondered about ML Farb's book, the one that I read, the
Vasilisa.
Vasilisa, is that right? How you say that one? I wondered about that, Vasilisa. Yeah, because she ends up fighting against people against them, and there was hope in there. So I wondered a little bit if that one would fit. And they're going to do that one on audio, so I thought maybe that might be another one. But if not,
no, I think that one does, because it's basically the concept of like a small band of people fighting back against immense challenge and not losing hope, right, not just giving in to what's going on mm-hmm. around them. And I did read Vasilisa, and that was right. So good. It's a fairy tale retelling, and I think that definitely would qualify. About halfway through, it definitely switches into the hope punk mood. But that one's also mm-hmm. just really good for people who like chess and like seeing older married couples in healthy marriages. I loved that. It's a breath of fresh air.
So sweet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The relationships. Yeah, I love the relationships in that one, most definitely. Yeah. But we also recommend that for older. Right.
Yeah. So obviously I'm a firm believer in later is better than earlier. And I would always recommend books later mm-hmm. age mm-hmm. than younger than a kid is actually ready for. But I think that one is really good for like 16 and up, because those are the kids that we're having a hard mm-hmm. time finding good, clean romances for, and good 16 and up relationships and life experiences. And if you read all the books with 16-year-old heroines when you're 14, you won't have any left when you're 16. And there's really a lot when you're 14 where the kids are 13 and 14 years old, and that's really good. Nara was 15, and when she was like, I'm tired of reading books about kids younger than me, now I want books about kids older than me. And that was my experience too. Like around that point, I was like, okay, I'm done with like the 13, 14 preteen stuff. I want the older kid stuff. And so I would recommend, if you are a more conservative family that has more conservative values and is struggling to find books that would qualify as YA that you are comfortable with, definitely hold on to Vasilisa for 16. But the majority of ML Farb's books in that series, the Hearth and Bard series, would be 14 and up. I really think the Vasilisa, it jumps right into a romantic relationship mm-hmm. that leads to marriage, and I just think that's better held on to for kids that would really appreciate it more.
I actually have it in my back pocket to recommend to a girl that is not reading what good and true books right now, and I'm like, oh, if she ever asks me, that's the book I'm gonna recommend to her, because I think she'd like it. You know, she is a little bit younger, but she's been exposed mm-hmm. to that type of stuff. So I think it's good to have those in our back pockets to be able to give to the right age and the right, mm-hmm. even if age doesn't matter, the experiences. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I have a couple. I didn't know what Hope Punk was. I was really working hard to be like, okay, Amber and I have talked about this enough, but for some reason, I can't remember. But I do. I think that book, LMNOP, did you guys ever read that book?
Love that book.
That was fascinating because their freedom of language was being taken away.
I think it was written for adults, but it would be very well appreciated by young adults.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really good one just because basic freedoms, and at first everybody's handling it kind of nicely and funny and they're being real creative, but then at the end, there's something real being taken away from them and they have to make really hard decisions and they have to decide together. And I really liked that. There was a children's book I read this year called Wilma Unlimited.
Wilma? Book. Yeah. I just Wilma said it the same way. Unlimited. Yeah. Wilma or Wilma? And then I was like, wait, what did I think I heard?
Yeah, Wilma. If I remember correctly, she was an athlete, a runner.
Oh, yes. I did read that.
Back when she's African-American.
Yeah.
And back when it wasn't allowed and she did it anyway. And she just pushed empowered through. And I loved that because she had to come up against society. And she succeeded, and I really love that. I read a book this year called Walking with Miss Millie, which was in our juvenile section of our library. And it was about some hard life that the girl and her, I think her brother and her mom had left an abusive dad. Or he had left. Let me rearrange that. He had left. And they moved back to care for an elderly parent. And then Miss Millie is the neighbor. And so, again, this intergenerational relationship thing is happening. And then hard, hard life things happen within the book written for kids in that juvenile genre. So it ends beautifully. I hate books that end poorly. So if they end and it's what I would consider a tragedy, then I say, this is the worst book I've ever read because I hate, we live in tragedy sometimes. So I want my books to end well. Even if they don't end happily, I need there to be some type of a finishing. Closure. And this book had beautiful closure in so many different ways. Like at the end, she kind of recaps the closure. And I appreciated that because there were things I wasn't picking up on in the book. That at the end, when she's recapping, she's talking about what she learned. And I was like, I didn't realize that was a thing. So I think that book was Hope Punk because it kind of starts out desolate and she's not sure her place in the world. And then through a relationship with her mom, her grandma, and this next door neighbor, she finds hope in the most unusual places.
Beautiful. Do you think that would also fall under the category of modeling healthy processing of emotions?
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's great that you just brought up picture books, too, for the Hope Punk genre. So many times I think we limit ourselves saying, well, it has to be a YA or it has to be. But there, I mean, how many oppositions did people go through that they were able to, you know, have hope? Or we have hope because they pushed through it. And I think that's where we need to look at. So I appreciate that you brought out some picture books. We need to probably keep looking in there.
Yeah, so I do have one more picture book. I only picked it up because I don't really know anything about the wall that separated Germany. And it's called The Wall.
Is it Uri?
Let me see who the author is if I wrote it down. And was Peter Siss is the author. And that was fascinating because I didn't realize how much that one connected with me until I went to the Czech Museum with Amber and her family in Cedar Rapids. And all of a sudden it came to life just how people had to creatively continue relationships and how lives changed for the worse. But then again, this Hope Punk idea of like, it's not always going to be this way. We're going to make it through. We're going to do the things. And lots of people lost their lives for others because that wall went up. And that was a children's book too. And I just didn't know about the Berlin Wall. So I wanted to get a children's book to give me some understanding. And it was so beautifully illustrated. Because it's useful imagination and when things are really hard and you're on the side of the wall where everything is not free, you needed imaginative play and imaginative relationships and you needed to keep engaging your imagination. And it was so beautiful.
Yeah, I was so surprised to see that book at the museum. Did you see it there? Or had you already made the connection? Yeah, it was
was it,
on the other side from the St. Nicholas display. It was in a case. I think I took a picture of it with whatever the placard was. I'll send it to you. But yeah. I hadn't made the connection to that book and the Czech experience. And then that museum definitely brought some of that alive. But I'm so glad that you mentioned LMNOP, because I have talked to 3 separate people about that book this week and then forgot to put it on my list here. And Inara and I were talking about Hope Punk books for maybe an hour last night when I was supposed to be filling in the list. And then we get to the end of the conversation and I realized I'd forgotten to write as I went. And so I like backfilled with as much as I could think of. And what I had forgotten was LMNOP. I completely agree. And Inara and I had this big conversation comparing and contrasting LMNOP with The List by Patricia Ford. And it's a series of 2 books. And if you want to buy the second book, go on the Reshelving Alexandria literary catalog and just look at the list and see what it says book 2 is, because book 2 has 2 titles, one for the American publishing and one for the UK publishing, but they're both readily available in America. And so you might think that you are like, oh, it's a new book. It's not a new book. It's the same book that you already have. don't get overly excited. So it has the titles. It has the different 2 titles for book 2, and I forget what they are, but the list is, so in LMNOP, they're losing their language because they're losing their ability to use specific letters. So you can't use words that have these letters due to superstition. In the list, and the book 2 in English is called The Last Lie. So in the list and The Last Lie, what is happening is the world had progressed to a point where we were cloning and doing all of this really advanced playing God sort of stuff. And then there were all of these natural disasters and I think man-made disasters happening as well. And just everything was crumbling. And this man, John Noah, he rescued a group of people on Noah's Ark. His last name is spelled N-O-A, but like they still call it Noah's Ark. And so he rescues these people and basically tells them that everything that went wrong was the result of language, like talking too much and being able to communicate too well. Very much like Tower of Babel reflections happening. And that as a result, they go to something called List. And there are words on a list, and that is what you are allowed to speak. And that's it. And so there are the people, it's very socialistic. You're getting food rations and water rations in town. And people had gone out looking for more survivors and looking for more land. And the main character, her parents had been the last people to go out, and they'd never returned. And so she is the apprentice of the wordsmith. And so she actually speaks more than just List, but she's only allowed legally to speak List. And there's just this collection of words going on, and the wordsmith has the words like all written on cards with definitions in boxes. And so each chapter title has the definition of the word underneath it, which is just really cool. And then there are the people outside town who the people in town call, I think, just, what do they call them? The Despicables or the Deserters or something, but they call themselves the Creators, and they are still involved in the arts and music and storytelling and speaking off List, which is a death penalty sort of issue similar to LMNOP. And from book 1, we see her going from being in town believing that that's the right way to out of town with the rebels. And in book 2, so I picked up The Last Lie from the library and was like halfway through before I realized there was a book 1. And it does a really good job of recapping the information from book 1. But I was still like, man, they are expecting me to have known a lot that I do not know. And then when I realized there was book 1, I stopped reading it and went back to book 1. So now I'm almost through book 1. Inara has read both of them and loved them. And so
It gives off the same vibes as The Giver.
Mm-hmm. It says Fahrenheit 451 meets The Giver in an award-winning dystopian story about the dangers of censorship and how far we will go in the pursuit of freedom. And their language has been taken down to 500 words. Mm-hmm. And then in book, so what I was reading in book two, where I was like, no, I know that I'm missing stuff, and started Googling and found that there was a book one, but they discover that all the babies who have been being taken have been taken to this giant nursery where there's no speech allowed in the room. And so the plan is to like raise a generation with no ability to communicate, basically just to be workers. And it's this like really important look at our humanity and our ability to communicate and express ourselves. And I felt that it would be a really good book to read along with Element OP and have some really good compare and contrast conversations. But it also, like, now that I'm talking about it, I also really want to discuss it with Inara when I'm done with it, because I'm the holdup here. She's like raring to go. I need to finish it. It's in my purse. Compare it with Cytonic, which is the third book in the Brandon Sanderson Skyward series, because that one has some themes about AIs becoming human almost. And so just so many conversations in that book about what makes us human and what sets us apart. And I think that there's so much in this that answers that question as well. Brandon did an amazing job with Cytonic answering those questions. But yeah, I think that this is just like a really good pack of books for deep conversations within families. And I would recommend, if your kids are reading these, to be reading them yourselves so that they're in your common vernacular, so that you're able to have these hard conversations and not just leave it up to the books and to society to be informing these opinions in your kids. But The List and the Last Lie by Patricia Ford, Element OP, which is Ella, like the name, E-L-L-A, Minnow, like the fish, P, like the vegetable, even though it just sounds like the letters Element OP, and then the Brandon Sanderson Skyward series. So I think that those are all just like this really nice package deal. So, yeah. And I'm trying to think other categories. I think those books would all fit in like other categories in other book lists, so, or reading challenges that we will get to. But those are good. We could just talk about Hope Punk books all day, but we're not going to. We're going to jump into category three, a book that embodies an aspect of Psalm 23. To Kill a Mockingbird. That was one of the first books that came to mind for me, because I think that different characters are experiencing different aspects of those psalms. So there's definitely Valley of the Shadow of Death being experienced by the man who's on trial, being experienced by the children at the end of the book, if you've read it. There's the still waters. I feel like Atticus provides still waters for his children to rest next to. And as a parent, I think that that's really, you could do a whole parenting study on Atticus and how he manages things after his wife has passed away and he's raising two kids alone. But I feel like Atticus always was still waters when I would read about him or think about him as a kid. And I think that rest, like the cycles of rest, which is on a different challenge that also is in Psalm 23, like gives me rest. And I think that the Deep South really shows that, right? Like they don't have air conditioning. And so they rest in the heat of day. People are just sitting on the courthouse steps. People are sitting drinking sodas by the, you know, drinking iced lemonade and iced tea on the front porches. And this, you just see this theme that they're not overexerting themselves when it would be unwise to because of the oppressive weather. Similarly to how farmers aren't doing a whole lot in the middle of winter. So there's just these cycles of rest built in. And then Atticus is righteous. He really is. And he is seeking righteousness and going after it. And so I think that he is just a reminder that there is righteousness, which sometimes it can feel like there's not a whole lot. So I just thought there were a whole lot of themes and probably pick out even more.
That was good. Yeah. I have Echo Mountain down for Psalm 23. I felt like Echo Mountain spoke to that. And then, of course, A Place to Hang the Moon. I felt like a lot could resonate with them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The one I had for this one is the Lois Johnson series about the Vikings. The first one, Raiders from the Sea. Mm-hmm. Because
the Viking Quest.
Yeah, the Viking Quest books. Just because they follow those themes where there's hardship and then there has to be a renewing of your heart as you're going through the hardship. And then there is rest even in the hardship. And then at the end, there's even the version of, you know, he prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And she's literally with her enemies. She's been stolen. And we read those books. We read two of the, I think there's five or six in the series. And my kids loved every minute of it. And I think it's an interesting embodiment of Psalm 23. And it is a faith-based book, not like in your face, shoving it down your throat, faith-based, but just beautifully written. And that one, instantly, when I saw the challenge quota for that, that embodies the aspect, I thought, oh, it's the Viking books we read this year. I instantly thought that.
I agree for Echo Mountain, absolutely, for Psalm 23. And I had a note here that I also wanted to say that Inara is arguing hard for Echo Mountain being hope punk. And I think her argument stands true. So she said that when she read Echo Mountain, she felt that everyone had despair. The mom and sister had despair. The old lady on the mountain who was dying had despair. The boy from the other side of the mountain who's dad had passed away and he was having family issues. He had despair and hopelessness. And, you know, the dad is in the coma. So just everyone had hopelessness, but
the dog, the lady,
the dog. Yes. The matted, overwhelmed dog. And Inara said that she, the main character, she was the only one with hope. She was the one that had hope the dad would get better. She was the one that had hope that she could figure out how to help the old lady on the mountain. She was the one that had hope that just like sparked a friendship with this boy. And I was like, yeah, like in our lives, like we can be hope punk in our own lives. It doesn't have to be some huge battle scene with friends that have literally taken up swords with you. Like sometimes you are the only person standing with a torch of hope in the environment around you. And pursuit of positive aims in the face of adversity. If that's the definition for hope punk, I definitely think Echo Mountain hit it. So I just thought that was really sweet how she was looking at it through that lens and not just in the, because we're reading Fellowship of the Rings right now, right? So it's, that one is obviously blatantly in your face, hope punk. And for her to just see the nuance of Echo Mountain also being that just kind of touched my heart. But she loves those Viking Quest books. So I just want to say about the Viking Quest books that the author is a Christian and does include blatantly Christian content in her books, if that is an issue for anyone. And the books also age up with the reader and the characters. So the characters are getting older in the books as they go. And I'm pretty sure it goes from like mid-teens to marriage. Is that correct, Val?
We haven't made it that far yet. We only made it early in mid-teens.
Maybe somebody's going to get married.
Okay. I'm gonna keep reading them.
That's what Inara said. Inara said that they start when they're a teen, and then she mapped them out for me at one point, and they go through to marriage. So that is, if you're looking for a series that runs that way, similar to like Harry Potter, where every year Harry's a year older, that's kind of how the Viking Quest books are. And there's six or seven of them in the series, so they're well loved by those who have read them. A book about forgiveness is category 4, and I have two recommendations. Treasures of the Snow will always be my number one recommendation for a book modeling forgiveness. by Patricia St. John. And I think that it models it for all ages because everybody in that book ends up having to forgive somebody, even themselves, for different things. And we get to see what happens when you haven't forgiven someone for a really long time and when you've been carrying the burden of feeling unforgivable for a very long time, how that can affect your life. And then the other book that really influenced me as a kid would be John Newton, The Angry Sailor by Strom. And that's a pretty quick read. It's a biography on John Newton, who is the author of the song Amazing Grace. And it covers his childhood. He loses his mom really early, joins the boats at like 7 or 11 as whatever the boys that help clean the boats are called. That word is failing me. And then he moves through the shipping careers. I mean, he's just an angry sailor. He's an angry young man. He's an alcoholic. He is profane, not in the book, but like it describes him as this. Ends up as a slave trader, captaining slave boats, and just all of this. And then the Lord gets him, and he has to experience the forgiveness of God, and that is just incredibly powerful. And then leads him to being able to write all those different verses for Amazing Grace that are so powerful mm-hmm. on grace, which I think is so closely tied to forgiveness. So those are my two books that first would come to mind on forgiveness. Did you two have any for that category?
I love nonfiction, and I read a book by Susie Larson. She's an author out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. She wrote a book called Fully Alive, which is about living your best life. But of course, you can't live your best life if you're holding on to unforgiveness. And so all throughout mm-hmm. the book, she's weaving ideas of forgiveness and what that looks like and how to live a forgiven life and how to be forgiving in life as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's really helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have Unbroken. Everybody recommends that one all the time for forgiveness because he comes back to after he comes back from World War II as a prisoner of war mm-hmm. and comes back. I didn't personally enjoy the book. Like, just mm-hmm. like it wasn't one that I enjoyed. But I do see the forgiveness side to it, and I have read it, and I do. There is a lot of context consideration, in my opinion, on that book. Mm-hmm. Echo Mountain, of course.
Real quick, on Unbroken, is that the book that I saw you say also has a young reader's version?
It does have a young reader's version. But the more I look into that, that might have just taken some profanity out of it, but not necessarily mm-hmm. allowed it was disturbing. I think things happen then.
Heaviness.
Yes, there's a heaviness to it. I believe mm-hmm. things happen. It would not be one I would hand to my kids or one that I'm going to jump up mm-hmm. and read again. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't want to read it mm-hmm. again. I think it allowed me to understand possibly where people were coming from, but everybody raves about it, and I don't have that. So it's one of the ones that, you know, what does everybody rave about that you didn't like? That would be the one I did not care for. So I can clearly say I do not enjoy it. I do see where there's forgiveness because Billy Graham, he was led to the Lord through Billy Graham. Once he came back, he had PTSD. I mean, he had all those things. They don't talk mm-hmm. about it, but it's there. And I see where the forgiveness comes in with the book. But it's pretty raw and heavy. Echo Mountain, I think the main character had to forgive herself, and that happened. Mm-hmm. And I see forgiveness big time in that book. So once again, we're going to keep on plugging Echo Mountain. It might be our most recommended book this year, but we're going to keep on plugging it. Wolf Hollow talked a lot about forgiveness in that book. I enjoyed.
And that's the same author as Echo Mountain, Lauren Wolk.
I enjoyed all three of all the other ones I've read of hers, Wolf Hollow, and then My Own Lightning. I love that. I actually read that one first before I read Wolf mm-hmm. Hollow. There's a lot of aspects. You could probably read those and plug them in after you read mm-hmm. Her Lauren Wolk books. So that's what I had.
And I want to say about the Lauren Wolk book, just because anytime somebody says I liked all of hers that I read, I feel this responsibility to say this. I have not read the first book she ever wrote. But Amanda did. Oh. And it is not a children's book. It was like YA. No, it's adult, but the cover looked YA. And Amanda, it's one of her few did not finish books of the last few years. So whatever Lauren Wilk's first book was that we don't talk about because we don't want to get the name stuck in people's heads, that's not the one that we recommend. But we recommend all of her middle grade fiction and YA from the last few years. And I'm glad that she's still writing. That's really exciting. And two old women, one of the members in the group, that was her recommendation, Sarah's, by Velma Wallace. And Sarah said, this book is based on an Athabascan, I probably butchered how you say that, legend passed down to the author by her mother. It's a powerful story of betrayal, perseverance, forgiveness, and survival against all odds. And the categories that she thinks that this book would fit are a book with forgiveness. And then she goes into like the 52 book challenge type categories as well. A book with a season or phase of life. A book that embodies an aspect of Psalm 23. A book about survival. A book about belonging. Book by an own voices author, because she's writing a legend from her own heritage and community. So that one was Two Old Women by Velma Wallace. So those are our books about forgiveness. And then a book with joy. For me, A Christmas Carol. Because there's just so much joy in Bob Cratchit's family and Tiny Tim. Whether it's warranted or not by what people's expectations would be looking in. He has a joyful spirit. And then there's just so much joy in Christmas present that Scrooge is confronted with, and then Scrooge's joy when he realizes he hasn't died and the spirits managed it all in one night and he still has a chance to make things right. And so I think for as heavy as that book can be, I think it also is a very joy-filled one. And then Anne of Green Gables is very joy-filled for me, and Trolley Car Family is one of my favorite quick kids reads. And then Emma, I think, has some really good balance of sadness and joy in the scenes that go throughout it. Emma by Jane Watson. Jane Austen. There we go. Don't know where that came from. So yeah, those were my joy books. What about you guys?
Somebody just recommended Surprised by Joy by C.S. Lewis. I have not read it, but it sounded really good. And I think it, because I know I haven't read it and I know we're supposed to do ones we read, but I was like, okay, I think that one should be recommended more than it's being recommended for this topic. So I'm going to recommend it. Plus now it's on the podcast and you can put it in another spot. That's what we're helping you fill out your forms, ladies. We're doing this. So, and because I did not enjoy becoming Mrs. Lewis, as well as a lot of other people are, but they enjoyed it. And I think there's joy probably in that. I can see that. So I was hoping that maybe I'd enjoy this with The Surprise by Joy with C.S. Lewis by C.S. Lewis. So.
Being his actual works instead of an inspired by the life of sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely.
I would go back and say Fully Alive by Susie Larson, because that book is just so good. And every chapter I finished, I just walked away feeling so uplifted, which it is a book about faith. So, of course, there's joy in that. If we're just talking about any old book, Hinds Feet on High Places probably has to top anything I've ever read in my whole entire life. Because with each little section in her life, even through the struggles, she is finding joy in little things. And I think about that book probably 3 times a day since I read it 4 years ago. So that's been amazing.
Yeah. And of course, on my purchase list. So
I recommend you purchase a beautifully illustrated one then.
The one that matches the Hiding Place beautiful purchase like one. Okay. Thanks for just, confirming that in me.
It is so beautiful. So I was not raised in the faith, but the Pilgrim's Progress that keeps popping up in my homeschool curriculum was so annoying to me as I read it to my children because I didn't understand why I would want to read an allegory like that to my kids. But when I found Hinds Feet on High Places, that made so much more sense to me. And so my family knows Pilgrim's Progress now very, very well. So now I'm getting them to know Heinz Feet and High Places because, oh, it's just so applicable to all avenues of life. And I just love that. Guys, the ones I'm loving right now is a nonfiction book called The Gentle Art of Domesticity. Has anybody read that?
I haven't.
It's beautiful.
But I've seen it recommended.
It's so much fun. And so I'm reading it with the girls right now. And she just talked about this pineapple upside down cake, which she just thinks pineapples are so much fun. And so she's talking about how fun pineapple upside down cake is. And I was like, this is like making me gag. I've had pineapple upside down cake. It's not great. But my kids are like, because she presents
it. Yes, it is. It is good. Maybe you've not had good pineapple upside down cake.
Correct, Amber. Do you know why? I made it New Year's Eve. I said to the kids, hey, you want to do something fun? Let's make pineapple upside down cake. And did you know Fanny Farmer Cookbook says that cake is supposed to be made in a cast iron skillet, which I love making things that you mix like right on the heat of the stove and then you move them in. And so we did it. My kids are not cake people. They do not love cake. And all I did was mix a white cake mix out of the box. And I put the rings down. You have to make like a caramely syrup to put the pineapple rings in out of brown sugar and butter and whatever. And I poured the cake mix on top and threw it in the oven. And when it came out, we flipped it over. I think we oohed and aahed at that silly cake forever. But it is because the book, The Gentle Art of Domesticity, is handing us this idea that people who are home get this amazing opportunity to create. And this is her whole book about all the things she loves creating. And it's paper crafts and yarn crafts and fabric crafts and how she's, you know, pulling that in. And the one thing that just hit me at the end of the year was the idea that adults have forgotten how to play. And the best way to figure out how to play is to watch children play.
Yeah.
And I love that idea. It brings me so much joy. I read it about every other year. And so I just wanted to plug that one again because it's amazing. Yeah. Understood Betsy is probably my favorite childhood book. It used to be Anne of Green Gables, but I think Understood Betsy has taken over Anne of Green Gables. I think the story resonates more with my life. And I think her determination to just like figure, she has to just figure it out. Do you guys know the story of Understood Betsy?
Yeah.
That is amazing. To me, that is a story of great joy. And then The Garden of Beatrix Potter, another nonfiction, because I love nonfiction. That book came out a couple of years ago, and I sit down in the end of January and I read through it because it goes through what her actual garden was and what her garden looked like and how she created her stories based on the gardens that she knew.
Oh, that's cool.
It just makes me feel like I love Beatrix Potter so much more. And someday, now that the world is back open from the pandemic, I will be visiting her place and her gardens, which are all still running in running order. So that one just brings
me. Which is amazing. Isn't that just amazing?
It is amazing. And she did not have an easy life. She had to fight her parents and society for everything she got. And she did it with such whimsy. I mean, I don't feel like her books come across super bitter and angry and with an agenda. Although there are little hidden stories. I mean, if you really look for it, they're probably there. But this story about her garden just helps me to know her better. And because she has her writings and drawings have stood the test of time, I think it's valuable to know based on her diaries. Did you know she kept incredible journals of everything she was planting, where she got it from? She would talk to neighbors and say, well, I'm going to grow lettuce. Which brand is the best? And they'd say, don't do that. Do this. This one gets bugs. This one doesn't get bugs. And so she was like this little horticulturist all the way along.
Yeah.
It brings such joy. So.
Oh, love that.
I love gardeners that are basically keeping like captain's log.
I know. Notebooking.
Yes, absolutely. So we have book by neuroscientist for the next category. And I'm reading The Other Half of the Church by Wilder and Hendricks.
Me too.
Yeah, because we were at the same conference where Jesse was talking about it. And he... That man can sell a book. He got me so interested in this book. And so we are reading that book. And
did you know there's also a podcast? Did you know it's also in podcast?
Yes. I was going to say they read the book aloud on the podcast.
Oh.
So if people don't want to buy the book, they have made it available by reading aloud on their podcast and then talking about it even more on the podcast. So you will get even more thoughts about it. So we will add that link to the show notes as well. And so that's a book by a neuroscientist. And then that book also fits into category 9, which is a book on habits. And so I was going to say this when we got down there, but we have a reading club going for Reshelving Alexandria right now on Books on Habits on Facebook. And that's one of the books that a lot of people are reading. And so if you'd like to join that group, there will be a link in the show notes to our specific book club on habits where we're not just reading one book together. We're reading a whole bunch of books. It's a bring your own book club. And then we're just all discussing them on the same topic and encouraging each other in what we're reading. So that was my neuroscientist book. And obviously, I'm just going to throw it in there because I always do. The Body Keeps the Score. For anybody who has a body and knows people with bodies, I recommend The Body Keeps the Score. That's how I feel about it.
Good.
Did you guys have any neuroscientist books? There's a whole bunch of really good recommendations of books that people are reading that have come out in the last couple of years that I haven't read yet that are on Facebook. If you follow the RA 2023 Reading Challenge hashtag, you can find those. But did you guys have any that stood out to you?
I was trying to, how do you know if it's a neuroscientist or a psychologist? Because I thought, well, I have a lot and they talk about the brain, but I don't know that they were written actually by neuroscientists or... How do you know?
Yeah, usually it says in the author description.
Yeah, I don't, if I'm like, oh, neuroscientist, fun. And then I just move on. But I am reading The Other Side of the Church too. In fact, I have two sets of friends listening to the podcast right now.
Oh, good.
For the other half of the church. And I'm actually getting together with Jesse and his wife on Sunday and we're going to talk about it.
Oh, we're having dinner with them on Saturday and we're going to talk about it. Jesse's going to be so sick of sharing about that book. It is his own fault.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Oh, I love it.
I just got done with When Breath Becomes Air by Paul, and I'll put it in the show notes. I can't not pronounce his name, but he's a neurosurgeon, and he gets diagnosed with terminal cancer. And so it's his journey through that, and it would fit with forgiveness. It would fit with the aspect of Song 23. I have it penciled in somewhere else. Healthy Processing of Emotions. So he comes out being a doctor. He's going through residency and he gets diagnosed with terminal cancer. And he wrote it himself. He died in the middle of writing the book. And the epilogue is done by his wife. Yes, I highly recommend it. I do think there might be a few profanity words quickly as he's processing. But it's not to the point where I don't think somebody that can understand processing grief and death and processing that, they would be fine with. I don't think it's going to take away from the story by any means whatsoever. So I did really enjoy that, When Breath Becomes Air, and he's a neurosurgeon. So he's not really a scientist, but I feel like it's closer of a stretch to put him into that book, into that category, or into aspects of Psalm 23, forgiveness. There was joy. There was, and they did have to healthily process their emotions and that. Yeah. So it was good. It's good. And there is some underlining scriptures. So he resonates with some of those and he doesn't really necessarily quote them, but he underlines it. So there is some Christian aspects through it. So cool. One that has not been recommended. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Haven't seen that one.
So I don't know where I came upon that. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I'm always constantly like, oh, I have this book. I have no recollection of why, but I know there was a reason. I got it when I did.
Me too.
So category 7 is a book written in the year of the rabbit. And if you want a lot of recommendations for this, like, and you're trying to figure out the years, if you go to Wikipedia, you can actually search children's books and adult books by publication year for like award winners and the most popular books of that year by whatever the metrics were that year that were being used. And so you can find a whole bunch of categories once you know what years you're looking for. But the ones that stood out to me that I wouldn't have known were written in the Year of the Rabbit that people may want to read would be Tree for Peter by Kate Sherity. for those that think I just mispronounced it, I did not. S-E-R-E-D-Y. A lot of you think it's Sarity. It's actually pronounced Charity, we discovered. So Kate Charity wrote A Tree for Peter, which was republished by Purple House Press, which is one of our books published by an indie publisher or small press option. So it could be either of those spots. Maude Hart Lovelace, who did the Betsy and Tacy Tibbs books, she wrote another book that's a standalone called The Tune is in the Tree. And that is a living science book. It's a little girl who becomes a bird and is in the tree, experiencing things that are happening in the tree. Similarly, in style to The City Under the Back Steps by Lampman, which doesn't fit this category, but just if you're familiar with that one, with becoming small and being part of an ant colony, this is becoming small and being a bird. So that one was reprinted by, I think, the Maude Hart Lovelace Foundation. We'll have a link to that in the notes as well. A out-of-print book that is worth finding if you can track it down is Tree Wagon by Evelyn Sibley Lampman, and that is a family going across the Oregon Trail, and the father's bringing fruit trees because that is his passion as a horticulturist, and so she has a tree she's responsible for, and just going with her in her journey of learning to appreciate the tree and the value that it has to not only her family but society at large, and then just their experiences with being in a wagon train going across the Oregon Trail. Rascal, which is a memoir by Sterling North, and it's him and his trash panda. So it's got the big raccoon on the cover and the friendship that he had with the raccoon as a kid, and it's a really funny book. And then people are always saying that they want to read this book, and so this is your opportunity. So Dorothy Canfield Fisher, who wrote Understood Betsy that Val was talking about, she wrote a book for adults called Seasoned Timber. And I've had this book on a stack of books to read for probably 5 years now. So this may be the year, because it is a book written in the year of the rabbit. So if you want to read an adult book by Dorothy Canfield Fisher, Seasoned Timber may be the one. And Seasoned Timber fits into our book with a plant in the title, because we're going to call timber a tree and say that it's good. So you could put it in either of those spots.
And Tree Wagon too, yeah.
And Tree Wagon also, yes, would fit. Mm-hmm. Both places, and Tree for Peter. Now I'm wondering if these are my plant title books. I'm looking at the wrong list, you guys. Forget it. All of those books are books with plants in the title. So okay, let's let's just forget the Year of the Rabbit for a second, since we're already doing books with plants in the title. Okay. And let's just do our plants in the title. So what are your plants in the title books? Did you guys have any?
I have Penny by Pearl S. Buck. I read that last year. For
Pennyroyal?
Penny, like the flower penny.
Peony.
Where are you from, Nebraska?
Welcome to rural Nebraska, girl, right here that does not garden.
It's all good. Yes. We love you.
It's all good. Peony. I know.
Okay.
Penny. I can picture the flower.
Yeah. No, I love peonies.
There you go, peonies.
Yeah. I have peony plant that is from Eric's dad's mom's plant from the house that his grandfather built. So part of the plant went to all 7 kids, and then Eric's mom gave us part of the plant. So we all have peonies out in our yards.
Peonies. There you go. Mm-hmm. But that's about the Jewish people in China, if I'm recurring it. But it's Pearl S. Buck. I read her because I was a beloved author that I did not know that she had that book. So there, go on with your trees book. Yeah. We can pronounce trees in Nebraska. We don't have them, but we pronounce trees in Nebraska.
I just finished reading Braiding Sweetgrass. It was fabulous. Mm-hmm. It's nonfiction. That was fabulous. Our favorite Christmas story is the story of Holly and Ivy, which is also really beautiful. And Holly and Ivy are both plant names.
Yeah.
And the other one I just really love, but it doesn't actually list the plant name, is called The Lost Flower Children by Liesel. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of this one? Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful one. I've been reading through the books in my local library, especially the older ones, because we want to know when we're going to start getting rid of some of them. And I'm like, mm-hmm. these books are so good. Why are people not reading them? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then A Year in Our New Garden, which also doesn't have a plant name, but it's all about plants and a garden. So
nice. Very cool. Okay. So I'm looking at my notes more intently now. Now that we're getting down out of my range of sight, I'm going to lift them up higher. So I think, based on when I switched from pen to pencil, that Rascal and Seasoned Timber are books written in the Year of the Rabbit. And I just wrote them underneath that because they also were books with a plant in the title. So I was just supposed to remember this, but I didn't have enough notes. So Rascal and Seasoned Timber are books in the Year of the Rabbit. And then my other Year of the Rabbit books that I had were Prince Caspian from the Chronicles of Narnia, Anne of Ingleside from the Anne of Green Gables books, All of a Kind Family, which is a Jewish family in New York City, and it's an all-girl family, and I love that book. That book came up 3 times last week over family Christmas in Chicago because my sister's boyfriend is Jewish, and so he would bring something up, and this is basically my sister and I's common shared frame of reference on the Jewish experience from our childhood is this book. And so since he has 2 young daughters, we were like always pitching this book to him. You gotta get All of a Kind Family. So All of a Kind Family, which is the beginning of a series, and it goes through until the oldest daughter gets married. The Singing Tree by Kate Sheridy. And then Magical Melons. Not everyone knows that Magical Melons exists, but it is the sequel to Caddy Woodlawn. So if you liked Caddy Woodlawn, there is another book out there, not always as easy to find, called Magical Melons. And those were the Year of the Rabbit books.
And okay, so the Year of the Rabbit, just meaning the Chinese calendar year, where like yes. every decade there's mm-hmm. a year that's the mm-hmm. rabbit. Okay.
Right.
I don't pay attention, I guess, enough to publication dates. So now I'll start paying attention to things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's fun when you're going back into like the 20s and the 30s and back into the 1800s to just be able to find a book. Some people just like to read a book that was written 100 years ago. So this is a good category if that's mm-hmm. something that you like to do every year, is to follow it that way.
100 years ago was not the 1890s. It was actually 1923. It was 100 years ago. My husband and I had that whole conversation over Christmas. Like in the 1890s, I'm like, 1923. He's like, oh, my word.
Yeah.
We're getting older.
Yeah. Yep, we are. It just keeps happening. So now we're to the book on habits category. So again, we have a group going through these books, and the most popular titles that people are reading through this year are Laying Down the Rails, Drive by Pink, The Other Half of the Church, Habits of the Household, and I think the number one book that people are either reading for the first time or rereading is Atomic Habits. So that's the type of activity that we have going on in our Habits Book Club right now. But there's a lot more titles that people have brought to the table as well that you might be interested in. An abridged or adapted book. This is the one that I expected people to get up in arms in, and they did not let me down, you guys. I know that we have this community of purists who do not think that there is a place, the majority of the members do not think there's a place for abridged or adapted books. And so I think that this is a good category for stretching ourselves and for a lot of black and white thinkers to see that maybe there's some room for gray at the table. But I have found that there are actually some really good abridged and adapted books that I think have a place. So for example, school copies of books remove the profanity. And so a lot of people wanted to read The Martian, or their kids wanted to read The Martian, but they were not comfortable with the amount of F words that were in it. And so finally, after years, they released a school copy. And so now if you want to read The Martian, you can read it without all the swear words. The Plymouth Adventure by Ernest Gebler That one was condensed by Evelyn Sibley Lampman. And so it takes this like 400-page book down to almost 300 pages. So you're not losing a ton of the content, and she's an excellent condenser and loves a good story. So I would trust her to do this, but maybe you don't really have 400 pages worth of time to read about the Plymouth settlement, but you still want a really well-written book. That's a good place to get one. So I think that people are going to find that there are better options out there than they think. And even looking at things like graphic novels of classics, which is a category in a different one, but you could also use that here, because if you have a graphic novel of a classic, that is an abridgment or an adaptation. And my girls love the manga Pride and Prejudice, because you get to read it from the back forward, and they're not really huge into manga, but it was like a nice way to have the experience of having read manga, so they can say to their friends who are like, oh, have you read manga? Yes, I've read manga. Pride and Prejudice. Okay. And Marvel did Emma. Yeah, go ahead.
I have comments. Can I make comments?
Absolutely.
Okay. First, I want to tell you, I kind of feel sad I don't have babies right now, because do you know that they have now made some of the classic stories into baby board books? I went into this beautiful store in Pella called Pella Papery, and in the back, they have the whole section of classics for babies, and they had Little Women, and they had like Pride and Prejudice, and they had... It was the cutest thing in my whole entire life I've ever seen, but of course my children are grown. I want to put a shout out to my friend Cheryl, who has probably every greatest illustrated classic you'd ever want. I have a dyslexic daughter who wants to read good stories, but is really struggling and still kind of needs the picture to give her some context of what's happening. And so I have just recently handed her Little Women. So she tried reading the original Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. There were lots of tears. There was crying. I was so upset. I don't want her to think of Little Women and then bawl about it in her adult life. My friend Cheryl said, I have the greatest illustrated classics. Would you like to borrow it? And I was like, I don't want it dumbed down. Okay, fine. And Isabel is blowing through that book. And she's like, this is the best story I've ever read. So I want to give some shout outs to parents who want their kids reading great books, but maybe the child isn't quite ready. I mean, Isabel age-wise is ready to read Little Women, but words and vocabulary cannot keep up with Louisa May Alcott's. And even how the story is flowing doesn't quite make sense, a whole lot of sense to her. So I just want to put a little shout out there, because we have read King Arthur in Greatest Illustrated this year so that Isabel can read King Arthur. We've done Little Women, and last year we did Robinson Crusoe. I hate that story like I hate any story in my whole entire life, Robinson Crusoe. But Greatest Illustrated Classics helped me to understand the story. So I've only read the original, and I had to read the Illustrated Classic to be like, oh, I didn't understand what was happening. So I know people are like, no, you should read the original and you should do the thing. But I'm so thankful that some of these abridged versions exist, because there are just some times and ages. And I think about like moms who don't have time to read, but they still want really great thing. An abridged version of a book is a really great way to get a really great story into your heart and mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some beautiful versions of abridgments that have been done that don't dumb it down, that don't just tell you the great, or like just don't, they don't just tell you the plot points and leave no beautiful language. Like there are some really well done ones. And I say, let's look at the Shakespeare retellings. All of those Shakespeare retellings are that we love, that Ambleside uses and all the Charlotte Mason moms are using for their kids. Those are abridgments and adaptions. And what they do is they give your kid a framework for the story so that then when they hit Shakespeare in its fullness, they understand what's going on and they're actually able to comprehend more than they would have otherwise. I call them pegs. I found this book that was out of print that I love and would love to see back in print called Pegs of History. And what it does is it goes through and it does like historical events and it's like pegging them along the way. And then when you see these events bigger, you have this like peg of information that you can hang other pieces of history in between. And I think it's the same way with these books. It gives you these pegs of understanding what's happening. I would like to take the example of Sense and Sensibility, one of my favorite Jane Austen books. if you start reading Sense and Sensibility, having never read Jane Austen and knowing nothing about that time period, 6 out of 10 people, this is my guess, will stop before the end of the first chapter, because the first chapter is basically talking about the financial dynamics of the communities and how England works financially when someone dies between men and women, the differences between sons and daughters. And if you don't care or understand what they're talking about or why it matters, you're going to drop out. Anybody who's having a hard time getting into Austen, I always recommend that they watch the movies first, because the movies hold enough of the original content that you are able to get a blueprint for what is going on in the story. They are enjoyable. The costumes are lovely. And they have items that you may not have ever seen before in the surroundings. And so you wouldn't even know what it was to imagine it when you're reading the book, right? Like if a kid has never seen farm equipment and you're reading them a pictureless book that has a has mention of a lot of farm equipment, they're going to have blank spots in their mental image of what's going on because they have no frame of reference. And so if you've watched Sense and Sensibility and seen it play out how this financial situation is affecting this family of daughters, then you can go and read the book and you can be like, oh, I know what's going on here and this is not cool. And wow, this is even worse than I had thought from the movie. These people are dogs. And so I think that there's definitely a place for getting those pegs, and know your kid as well. If you have a kid who's a voracious reader and doesn't need books like that and would read an abridged book and say, I've read it, I'm done, I'm not going back, then maybe that's not a good thing to offer to them. But if you have a kid who's like, I will read anything that sits in front of me, I don't care how many times, then you can give them the abridged book and then you can give them the real classic, and they're not going to be hurting at all, because my aunt had the white abridged classics at her house and I read all of them because I'd read through everything that had words on it in her house during all of our visits, and I read all of them and then I still read the classics, like reading The Count of Monte Cristo and The Three Musketeers in the white copies did not affect me reading them in the full blown a few years later. But I understood what was happening and I understood the ramifications of some of the decisions that were being made, which gave it even more weight to me. These books that really, like, I'm not going to get the full amount out of until I'm an adult, having had adult life experiences. So I think that there's a huge amount of space in our libraries for grace towards people who allow their family to read these, right? Like, why do we think that we get to sit on some high throne and judge them for their decisions, but also for appreciation for them on our own shelves? And I think that people may be surprised at how many adaptions and abridged copies of books that they have that they just didn't really acknowledge as being that. So I think it's a good category, and I think that it could just be good for people to open their little prejudices a little bit. So a book that models healthy processing of emotions, that was basically the theme of the podcast last year. It may be the theme of the podcast forever, who knows, at least a sub theme. So I think a lot of the book recommendations from last year would fit into these categories, but the ones that stood out to me the most, I have a very good friend whose mother passed away this morning, and the book that I had sent her in preparation for that event was Cry Heart But Never Break. It's a picture book, and it's one of my favorites. And she said that she'd checked it out from the library before and was familiar with it and wasn't super excited when I said I was sending it to her. She was just like, whatever. But then her daughter really latched onto it, her 6-year-old, and so they read it over and over again, and she said the more she read it, the more beautiful it was. So I really love Cry Heart But Never Break, which also is a book in translation, if that's a category that you're looking to fill on the 52 book challenge. Also, Wintering was a book that Val introduced us to last year, and I know in our last episode of the season, Amanda talked a lot about how important that book was for her moving into a season of wintering and a lot of people in our group have been really blessed by that book. And I read the first half of it. I need to go back and finish it. But I think that's a good book on modeling healthy processing of emotions. And that's also a good book on the cycles of rest for people that are looking to fill that category on the 52 book challenge. My other books, I'm just going to read through these really fast. 14 Cows for America is a great picture book on seeing another culture processing emotion. It's the Maasai of Africa processing the information about 9/11 having taken place and what their response to that was. A Path of Stars by O'Brien is about a grandmother processing the loss of her brother being the last living family member years after having survived the killing fields in Cambodia. Is that right? Is that where that happened? Cambodia? I think so. Now I'm just second guessing myself. But it was a lot of people from Cambodia actually settled in on the East Coast. And so their community, I believe it's in Maine, had this book written for the libraries to have something for them. So it has beautiful tellings of the grandmother passing on family history to the kids and then just what her bereavement looks like and how the family handles it when she finds out that her brother is no longer alive, having just passed away from old age. Maybe Tomorrow. I will always recommend Maybe Tomorrow as the best book on processing grief that I've read. And then back into chapter books, Treasures of the Snow, the book on forgiveness, also is really good just for modeling healthy processing of emotions. Adventures with Waffles is really good. There's the loss of a grandparent figure in that book and how everyone processes that. And then there's a lot of different emotions needing to be processed at different times. And Calico Captive by Elizabeth George Spear. I thought that was a really good compare and contrast book for emotional processing because it's based on the diaries of the woman who experienced it and her younger sister, who's the main character in the book. And the younger sister is definitely immature in her reactions to all of these hard situations of being kidnapped by the Native Americans and sold into a form of slavery in France and having to ransom themselves out of it and just all of this drama going on. But comparing the young sister, who's like 14 or 15's reactions to it, to the older sister whose diaries this book is based on, who has children and a husband, I found it very interesting. Like, the older sister had much more mature responses to everything. The woman gives birth on this forced march.
Yikes.
Under a tree shelter that was made. And then they continue the march later that day. Like, it's just, it's incredible. And she almost has a mental breakdown at one point, which I think is also a healthy processing of emotion at times. Like, sometimes that's what it looks like when your body is processing through too much input. You just kind of crack a bit. And so I think that it was just very realistic and not overblown or dramatized too much. Like, it's just this is what it was. But it made me very interested in trying to get a hold of, I think the Library of Congress has copies of her original journals and just reading those. I'd like to do that at some point. But those were my modeling of healthy processing of emotions top recommendations for today. Tomorrow it might be different.
Yeah. I have one from the junior fiction, because that's the section of our library I was reading through this year, called Where the Sky Lives. And it's a story about grief. It's a single mom and her daughter, and they move close to be with the mom's brother, who unexpectedly passes away and leaves a giant empty hole. And it's from the viewpoint of a 12-year-old girl. So thought it was really interesting because she doesn't want to ask questions, but then sometimes she asks questions. And when she asks questions, sometimes she gets answered. Sometimes she gets yelled at. Sometimes her mom just like shuts down and walks away. And she's just trying to figure out her world. And I thought that was a really beautiful way to kind of or put that out there a little bit, because again, our culture isn't necessarily one that will walk into grief and talk about it and do it well.
So our last category for today is a book published by an indie publisher or small press. So I'm going to make a post on the website that just has a list of all of our recommended small indie publishers and presses, but I'm just going to rattle them off here, the ones that came to mind quickest. Smidgen Press is a new publisher, and they do cute little books and digital books and hardcovers and paperbacks of bringing out-of-print books back into print. Storyworn Books, that would be the Green Ember series, is published there. Living Book Press and Yesterday's Classics, and Purple House Press. Beautiful Feet Books has brought a lot of old books back into print. They've also done some editing on some of the history books just to make them more accurate and in lines with the times. So they're not butchering the content. They're just taking out blatantly racist content to make otherwise really good books still valuable today. Bethlehem Books is a Catholic publisher, and they primarily brought Catholic books back into print, but a lot of really good historical fiction is available from them. Rabbit Room Press, Riverbend Press, Hillside Education, all doing back into print, or all doing new books or back into print books. Wanted to point out Youth with a Mission, which is YWAM. They have a bunch of missionary biographies. They have a series that I absolutely adore called International Adventures. It's modern times missionaries, and their stories are just absolutely fascinating. A lot of them are families. Some of them are not necessarily, I wouldn't say they're not for children. It depends on your definition of children. They're for teenagers. Some of them are. There's one where they are missionaries in the red light district, and it is incredibly benignly written about the red light district aspects and more about the people. So less about the activities of what's going on and more about the people being served, which is beautiful. But still, if you don't want to talk to your 10-year-old about what the red light district is, that's probably not the book for you. But Clooney Media, someone in our group mentioned that they had bought a lot of books there on Black Friday, and I looked into it, and it's a Catholic publishing house. And somebody else whose book recommendations I usually really appreciate, she recommended Voyage Comics, which she described the company as built on sharing truth, beauty, and goodness, and it's a comic company. And so she said that she'd read a lot of their comics, and they have a new YA book out this year that she had plugged in for one of her categories, but I wasn't super familiar with them. And then ML Farb's books that Charlessa mentioned earlier, Vasilisa, the Hearth and Bard books, and the King's Trials books, which are, I had mentioned the Hearth and Bard books being like 14 and up. King's Trial is probably, I think, 10 and 11 and up is what Amanda had said when she read them. There's some physical violence in them, or action type books. But this category could hold any self-published book as well. So if you had a self-published book that you were wanting to read from an author that you know or enjoy, that could definitely fall under the indie publisher umbrella portion of this. So we will have a post up soon on the website. Probably by the time this podcast is live, we'll have the post up on the website of all the publishers. So that will be linked in the show notes as well. Did you guys have any other books that we'd glazed over and you hadn't had a chance to mention that you wanted to, looking back over your notes, or did you get them all out there? You're all good.
My favorites out there.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, good. I had one book for the Psalm 23 that I had forgotten to mention, which is The Hiding Place by Corey Ten Boom. Mm-hmm. I just really think that there's a million aspects, the whole preparing a table in the presence of your enemy, walking through the valley of the shadow of death, righteousness and grace and all the rest that she and her sister needed, being able to find that in trauma. So that's a book set in World War II in the concentration camps, a true memoir by Corrie Ten Boom. So yeah, those are a lot of books, guys, but this was great. And we hope that you guys really enjoyed these book recommendations. And we encourage you to join us on Facebook, where we are discussing these books as we're reading them. We have the Reshelving Alexandria Reads group that is specifically for people doing reading challenges that want to talk about the books that they're reading or ask for insights. And then in the main Reshelving Alexandria group, we have the hashtag with all the different categories so that we had the big pond to fish in for all the best recommendations for these different categories. And then our habits group for people that want to read books about habits and see some intentionality changing the paths of your life and your kids' lives and the direction of your home. Might be really good for you to check out that group. But we would appreciate it if you would subscribe to our newsletter at reshelvingalexandria.com so that you don't miss any podcasts or articles or fun sales that we become aware of that we want you to be aware of. And thank you, Val and Charlessa, for joining me today and bringing your recommendations. Val, I always appreciate the nonfiction that you bring to the table, since I kind of was allergic to nonfiction until I became an adult. And so I don't have as much of that under my belt. But we appreciate all of you joining us today. And remember that the stories are truer than true.